On the program today, a year and what it has meant in this economy. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Thursday today, the 11th of March. Good as always to have you along, everybody. I'm going to start us off today with some numbers, and I'm going to do it real, real slow, because they teach you in radio school that numbers are hard to do on the air. So here you go. Oh, and there is a little time element in here as well, so pay attention. 52 Thursdays ago, 211,000 people filed first-time claims for unemployment benefits. 52 Thursdays ago, 211,000. This Thursday morning, 712,000 people filed first-time claims. 712,000. Yes, down from a week ago and way better than the worst early days of this pandemic when it was above a million for a couple of months. But come on, it's been a year now. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman has this year in unemployment.
To try to get a sense of the scale and severity of unemployment over the past year, I went to three of the smartest economists in my Zoom room and asked what number they think best explains where we are right now. Let's start with Andrew Stettner at the Century Foundation. His number, 51.
51 consecutive weeks of more than a million initial claims for unemployment benefits.
That's regular state jobless claims, plus claims under special federal programs for gig workers, parents stuck at home with kids, and others who usually aren't eligible for benefits. And for those 51 weeks, first-time claims have been higher than at any time during the Great Recession. Now to Julia Pollack at ZipRecruiter, and her number, 20 million.
There are 20 million people receiving unemployment benefits across all programs. That is a huge, huge number. So at the peak of the Great Recession, that number only got up to about 6.5 million.
Were it not for those federal programs for gig workers and parents and the like, about 8.5 million fewer out-of-work Americans would even be getting unemployment benefits right now. And finally, Joe Bruzuelas at RSM Consulting keeps coming back to the number 40%.
Revenue among small businesses is down almost 40% since January of 2020, and about 40% of the businesses that were open then are no longer open.
That's businesses with fewer than 10 employees and revenue under $10 million. Bruzuelas says recovering the jobs lost at those businesses could take a very long time. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
We happened upon a new survey from the Business Roundtable this week. That's a lobbying group of CEOs of some of the biggest companies in this economy. And those CEOs, well, they're feeling pretty good. The most optimistic, the Business Roundtable says, that they have been in 3 years. They're expecting sales to increase. They're planning to hire more. And they are going to spend more on their own businesses. Marketplace's Justin Ho explains why that's important.
The types of spending we're talking about are known as capital expenditures, big long-term investments that companies are making in themselves, says Evan Rawley at the University of Connecticut.
Investments in machines or buildings or other kinds of equipment that lasts, 10 to 30 years.
And because a lot can happen in 10 to 30 years, buying a new fleet of vehicles or building a new factory can be a risky decision. Especially, Rawley says, because it can take a long time for those investments to pay off.
It's about half the life of the thing you've invested in. So if you build a factory that's going to last 30 years, the break-even point isn't going to come until year 15.
But companies don't make these kinds of investments until they've started to see demand pick up, says Seth Carpenter, chief U.S. economist at UBS. He says many companies are already there and are thinking ahead.
I have a bunch of customers today. I'm getting towards the limit of what I can produce. If it looks like the demand is going to pick up further from here, then it's worth investing in a little bit more capacity.
And a lot of bigger companies are sitting on a lot of cash, says John Bai at Northeastern University. They've been borrowing a lot in the last year, since interest rates have been near zero.
And with that money, you don't want that to sit on your balance sheet. You want to put it to productive use, if you will.
And if companies feel comfortable making those kinds of decisions, Bai says that's a good sign about where the economy is headed. I'm Justin Ho. for Marketplace.
On Wall Street today, there was up. There was up a lot. And there was way up. Perhaps related, President Biden signed that relief bill this afternoon. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. As I said, President Biden signed the American Rescue Plan today, $1.86 trillion, I think, in its final incarnation. And there is a lot in this thing that is going to get the government way more involved in this economy, including some pretty significant changes to the Affordable Care Act. And remember, healthcare is almost 18% of this entire economy. Marketplace's Sabri Benishour has today's Obamacare update.
Emily Stewart-Clark gets an MRI every year to keep tabs on her brain tumor, so she really needs health insurance. Under this relief law, her premiums would be cut by nearly 80%.
I mean, it would help exponentially. I'm like a single mom, and I don't make like an exorbitant amount of money.
There are millions like Stewart-Clark who stand to benefit, according to Sabrina Corlett at Georgetown University.
This is really the biggest expansion of health insurance coverage since the Affordable Care Act was passed over 10 years ago.
First and foremost, it increases subsidies for people buying private insurance. And lots of people who didn't qualify for subsidies before will now.
Not only for lower income folks who are going to see big premium relief, but also for people who currently don't qualify for those tax credits if you're moderate or higher income.
Under the new law, nobody will have to pay more than 8.5% of their income on health insurance. Cynthia Cox is a vice president at the Kaiser Family Foundation.
Probably about three quarters of uninsured people in the U.S. who are citizens are going to be eligible for some sort of financial help.
It also means that people can get better coverage. Caitlin Donovan is with the National Patient Advocate Foundation.
The complaint for a lot of people has always been that they were scared of that monthly payment, and that they were forced into plans that didn't cover as much as they needed because they cost less.
The government will also now pick up 100% of COBRA premiums through September. That's insurance for people who've lost their jobs. The price tag for all of this, an estimated $34 billion. The catch here is that all these benefits expire. The subsidies end in 2 years, not long after the midterm elections. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishour for Marketplace.
You can hear Sabri not infrequently on the Marketplace Morning Report sitting in for David, but I think David's getting up early tomorrow. Check it out. It's everything you need to know to start your business and economic day. Our podcast, The Uncertain Hour, is spending this season reporting on work in America, how it's changing and what that means for this economy and for the people who work in it. And there are lots of jobs in this economy that most people have never heard of. That chicken you're maybe going to have for dinner, somebody's got to go out to the farms and round them up and then send them to the slaughterhouses. And oftentimes, that work happens in the middle of the night. Marketplace's Caitlin Esch has our story.
Most nights, for many years, Jimmy Nix would climb onto a shuttle van, ride out to a farm in rural Mississippi to catch chickens in the dark for hours.
We have to catch in the dark because the chickens are move in the light, and you can't get them. If they move, you got to run them down, and that would take all night.
The chickens are raised in these big houses, sometimes longer than a football field. In a single night, Jimmy would catch thousands of birds, scooping them up two at a time, a bird or two dangling upside down between each finger, working so fast he earned a nickname.
Personally, call me Quick Nick sometime.
Quick because he was so fast at grabbing chickens, and Nick because his last name is Nix. He got really good at it, and he took pride in the work. But this job is hard. Jimmy says it requires a certain steely resolve. You have to have your mind made up you're going to do it. And a lot of strong people don't last a week.
You handle chicken alive, they peck you. They crap on you. The chicken might even squirt in your mouth if you don't watch it. So, I mean, it's sad to say, but it happens to some people now. This is the stuff that chicken catchers have to go through.
It's been a few years since Jimmy caught a chicken, but his knuckles are still swollen from the work.
They got all blister up and stuff, and they swell.
Back when he started out, Jimmy worked directly for Cook Foods, one of the biggest chicken companies in the country.
Chicken catching for the plants, and you make them get pretty good money then.
Jimmy says he got benefits, too.
Paid sick days, dental insurance, hospital insurance, life insurance. And see, everybody needs all this. Anything can happen at any given time.
One day, about a decade ago, after a long shift catching chickens, he was told his job was going to be subcontracted out. Almost overnight, Jimmy went from being Cook's employee to Cook's non-employee, and he became instead an employee of the subcontractor.
You're not working directly under Cook's. You're working for him, but indirectly. But still, Cook's is in control. Does that make any sense?
It was confusing at first. Jimmy seemed to have two bosses. Under this new arrangement, the benefits he'd come to rely on went away, and the pay changed too.
You know, the money, it's not even half as much now. I mean, you're just barely making it. You got to do something on the side.
We reached out to Cook Foods and the subcontractor Jimmy worked for. Neither wanted to talk to us. But Jimmy says he wasn't paid for all the hours he worked. Hours spent riding out to farms in the subcontractor's van, putting on gear, waiting on the equipment when it broke down. He says he wasn't paid overtime. And sometimes when he counted up all of his hours, his pay came out to less than minimum wage, which is $7.25 in Mississippi.
You ain't getting paid for something. Something's not right when it happens over and over and over.
Some experts say this indirect relationship, where you aren't employed by the company that needs your labor, makes it harder to enforce basic labor standards like minimum wage and overtime, and it pushes down wages. That's because subcontractors tend to be small businesses. They're in the middle, trying to turn a profit, and competition among them can be fierce, which also pushes down wages. In 2016, Jimmy decided to fight back. He sued the subcontractor and Cook Foods for minimum wage and overtime violations.
And the point is we're trying to make them do better and treat us better, too, and pay us for what we're worth. And for the time lost, the time, the wait time, the overtime, which is all basically the same, it boils down to the same thing, we want to get paid.
About 270 catchers joined Jimmy's lawsuit. They argued Cook was their employer, too, and Cook should have to pay. Cook denied the allegations, denied it was the catcher's employer. The case went on for 3 years. In 2019, the company settled for $625,000. On average, those few hundred workers got about $2,100 apiece in back wages. I'm Caitlin Esch for Marketplace.
There's a whole lot more of Jimmy's story and more about how outsourcing is changing what it means to have a job in this economy today. It's all on The Uncertain Hour, of course. Follow wherever you like to listen. Coming up.
I've actually never watched it, which I know I have to.
Work of the past is most definitely not the work of the present. But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Industrials up 188 points today, just shy of 0.6%, 32,485. That is an all-time high. The NASDAQ picked up 329 points, 2.5%, 13,398. S&P 500 gained 40 points, about 1%. 3,939, also an all-time high. $130 trillion, that is the net worth of U.S. households, so says the Federal Reserve. Up 5.5% over the last quarter, with most of the gains from rising stock prices and rising real estate values, meaning most of the gains went to people already wealthy enough to own stocks and real estate, right? Good news from AMC Entertainment Holdings. The cinema operator beat revenue expectations for the past quarter, and hey, movie theaters are starting to reopen, so shares in AMC up 4.3% today. Bond prices fell. Yield on the 10-year Treasury note rose to 1.53%. You are listening to Marketplace.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdal. We talk a lot about and to small businesses on this program. This month, micro businesses, maybe just a handful of employees, and how they have been getting hit by this corona economy. Amelia Freeman Lind owns Freeman's Creative. That's in Durham, North Carolina. It's a craft supply store, herself and two part-time workers. It's a shop, yeah, but in the before times, it was also a community gathering spot where she'd offer classes like knitting and sewing and indigo dyeing. Amelia, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much for having me.
Tell me about Freeman's Creative in the before times, would you? How were you doing? How was business?
Sure. So we're a relatively new handcraft supply store. We opened in the fall of 2017. We've been kind of growing steadily since then, making a lot of friends in the community, having a lot of classes. And we ended up, you know, closing down March 15th, 2020, and very quickly changed everything about how we do business.
Yeah. Tell me about the changes, right? Because I imagine, first of all, people stopped coming in the door to your classes and all of that.
Exactly. So it's kind of funny, you know, when I was wanting to open this business, a lot of people said, you know, everything's online. Why not do, you know, an online business? I said, you know, I really want to connect with people. I want to show them kind of the joys of handcraft. And suddenly, you know, our whole model is now online and we're doing, you know, we're shipping, we're doing local pickup, we're doing virtual classes several days a week.
Yeah. A lot of the relief that is getting out from the government is in two forms. One is for people. The other is for businesses, but they tend to be larger than, you know, a couple of employees in a craft business in Durham, North Carolina. And I wonder if you feel there's a safety net for you, as it were, or are you forgotten?
I feel like that's been kind of the most disappointing thing. The community's been there for us, but the support from the government just hasn't been what's necessary. Everything that's been put out has been to kind of get a business through 2 or 3 months, and we're in this a year later. And that's been really frustrating, especially knowing that some of those larger corporate businesses that have, you know, a staff taking care of all that, you know, it's me and two other people for the most part. Yeah. I have to figure that out on top of keeping the business running.
Not only are you your own chief technology officer with no training, you're your own chief financial officer, right?
Exactly. Right. It's right. A lot of hats.
Right. Did you try for any of the emergency assistance, PPP loans or any of that?
Sure. So we did EIDL. We did PPP. I have a loan. As a growing business, all of the financial data they wanted was from the previous year. Well, we've, you know, grown since 2019. Yeah. And so a lot of it didn't really cover what our expenses were at that point. And I had to let employees go. It really wasn't meant to carry us through kind of the long term.
Yeah. So speaking of long term and carrying you through, here we are a year into this thing, almost to the week practically. Mm-hmm. Are you going to make it through to the other side, I guess, is the most base way to ask that question?
You know, my least favorite question has been all of my very kind customers when they come to do their pickup. They say, "How are things going?" and, you know, that's such a kind thing to say, but it's really hard to answer that question. We will rebound, but, you know, I can't plan because we don't know what the next few months are going to hold. So, you know, that's so much of running a small business is trying to anticipate what's coming next. And we can't do that right now.
Yeah. No thought of shutting it down. I mean, you're making it enough to not have to worry about that.
There are a lot of times where I feel extremely fortunate, and I just see so often how it could go a different way. You know, I was able to kind of adapt the business model. Mm-hmm. I don't have kids at home. You know, I have a partner who has a steady job. You know, this is something that I really want to be doing for, you know, 10, 15, 20 years. I hope that this is the future for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Amelia Freeman Lind. Her company is called Freeman's Creative. They're in North Carolina, Durham, trying to make a buy in this pandemic. Amelia, thanks a lot. I appreciate your time.
Thanks so much for having me.
So, a year. Schools have, of course, been virtual. A lot of offices have been virtual. And millions of people have had to figure out new ways to work. And doing that is complicated, especially for people who've never really been in any workplace at all. Learning on the job, as a lot of young people do with internships or apprenticeships, has become, in this past year, a whole lot more challenging. From the Workplace Culture Desk, Marketplace's Megan McCarty-Carino has that one.
In those halcyon early days of 2020, Washington University student Laura Glantz was dreaming of how she'd spend her summer. She wanted to intern at the famous ad agency Ogilvy in Manhattan.
I was really excited. I had visited the Ogilvy office when I was in New York. It's just like this beautiful skyscraper, and I absolutely love it there.
She envisioned renting a little apartment with some friends, taking the subway, and dressing to impress. You know, the whole Mad Men vibe.
Advertising is based on one thing. Happiness.
Okay, she was like 8 when Mad Men was on.
I've actually never watched it, which I know I have to.
But by spring, her New York dreams had come crashing down like Don Draper from the 37th floor of the Time Life building. She did get the Ogilvy internship, but instead of a skyscraper, she did it from the bedroom of her apartment in St. Louis, in a much baggier, comfier wardrobe.
Rather than like working hands-on with clients, we had virtual sessions, which were kind of more like almost teaching sessions.
But how are young people supposed to learn lessons about the workplace when there is none?
There's no observation, really. There's no serendipitous contact. That was lost.
Mariana Savoca works in career development at Stony Brook University, which opened a new center last year to develop best practices for remote internships. She says without opportunities to casually network at the coffee machine or listen in to discussions across the office, remote internships need to be more directed.
There has to be far more frequent and structured communication that covers not just the work product, but it also covers the corporate culture.
The multinational business services firm Accenture was already used to coordinating work across far-flung locations, but when their apprenticeship program went virtual, the company added new training on digital work skills and healthy remote habits, and increased the number of one-on-one check-ins with apprentices like Boubacar Sissoko of New York City.
Shadowing now has to be done online, and then it's just kind of just pinging someone, you know, if you need help. And then they're always there to, you know, to kind of give you that support.
Sissoko actually prefers this format. He says he feels less self-conscious and more likely to reach out to people he'd never approach in person.
It would kind of be really awkward. How would I start off this conversation? Because I don't want to go off as, you know, too relaxed. But I also don't want to go off weird, basically.
Sending a message and connecting over video is less nerve-wracking.
Just because, so the person only gets to see kind of your face and basically a profile picture of you, basically say. So I get to be a lot more open.
And not having to deal with commuting has given him time to take classes in the evening at John Jay College of Criminal Justice. Sissoko hopes he can remain remote even after people return to the office. And while Laura Glantz didn't get to live out her New York ad woman fantasies, she was able to connect with creative leaders all over the world.
While I did grieve, I think the accessibility to talk to people no matter where they are has been such a great thing that's come out of this.
With contacts now in South Africa and England, who knows? Maybe she'll be dreaming about taking the London Tube and getting a little flat in Notting Hill next. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out today, we talked about NFTs the other day. Non-fungible tokens is what that stands for. Digital, blockchain-based memorabilia, I guess, and collectibles. LeBron James dunking on somebody was the example I used. And as I said at the time, these things were fetching 6 and 7 figures at auction. Not LeBron, but some of them. Anyway, yeah, try 8 figures now. Christie's, the auction house, hammered home a sale of a piece by artist Mike Winkleman. He goes by the name Beeple. It's called Every Days, the first 5,000 days. It's a mosaic of every image that Beeple has made since 2013. Sold for, get this, $60.25 million. Doesn't come with anything. No box, no certificate, just the digital thing. All right, we're going, but here is your moment of economic context, government evermore in this economy edition. As I said, lots of stuff in the Biden relief bill that became law today that is going to change how government interacts with the animal spirits of this economy. And we are going to be covering that in the weeks and months to come. But right now, this observation, Press Secretary Jen Psaki said today at the White House that if you're eligible and you've got direct deposit, payments could start hitting your bank account this weekend. Amir Bibawe, Siobhan Brett, John Buckley, Eve Epstein, John Gordon, Rick Carr, and Betsy Streisand are the Marketplace editing staff. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.